All right. Good evening, everyone. Let's begin. So we find ourselves this week in Parshas Vayigash. We find ourselves in the midst of a dramatically exciting narrative that's been unfolding over the last number of weeks. So we dedicate our learning as a chus refuah shelema for Tamar Adina Baskena Shulamis, together with Kol Choli Yisrael, who should experience a speedy and emirat Hashem an enduring refuah. So let's begin with number one. So remember again, Parshas Vayigash begins with the charade still ongoing. Yosef HaTzadik still has not revealed his identity to his brothers. Again, which we'll touch on it a little bit later. But finally, the entire event that's been unfolding over the last two parshios comes to its apex. Number one, V'lo yochal Yosef lehisapik l'chala nitzavim elav. Yosef HaTzadik was no longer to hold himself back. No longer able to hold himself back. Vayikra hotziu kol ish me'alai. Tend everyone out of the room. And no one was present together with Yosef when Yosef revealed his identity to his brothers. Vayitin eskolo bevchi. Yosef cried out. Vayishmu Mitzrayim vayishma beis paro. Mitzrayim heard, beis paro heard. And Yosef says, Vayomer Yosef elechov, ani Yosef haod avi chai. And Yosef says, I am Yosef, is my father still alive? V'lo yachlu echav la'anos oso, kinif halu mipanov. And his brothers were unable to go ahead and answer him. Literally translated, kinif halu mipanov, because they were startled by his presence. So the pasuk goes on, Vayomer Yosef al echav, Gishuna elai, vaygashu vayomer ani Yosef achichem, Hashem mechartem osim mitzrayimo. Yosef realizes that his brothers are at a bit of a distance. He encourages them to come closer. Come closer. It's me. Ani Yosef achichem, Hashem mechartem osim mitzrayimo. It's me. It's me. It's the same Yosef you sold 22 years earlier. Va'ata al te'atzvu va'ayichar be'enechem ki mechartem osim. Don't be upset that you sold me. Kilemichya shalachani elokim lifnechem. Because Chodesh Baruch Hu clearly has a plan, and the Ribon Shalom sent me, allowed me to be sold, in order that I could ultimately be able to provide for you in the midst of this ongoing famine. So what I want to focus on tonight, there's so much to focus on in this parsha. There's so many things that we'll learn about family dynamics, so many things that we'll learn about relationships, so many things that we'll learn about the ability to heal after trauma. We can't do everything in the couple of minutes we have together tonight. So instead, what I want to draw your attention to is the underlined phrase. When Yosef says to his brothers, the first words he says, Ani Yosef, it's me, Ha'od Avi Chai. Is my father still alive? Now, the reason I want to draw your attention to these words is because they seem to be very much out of place. If you take a look at number two, so the Beis HaLevi, and again, I think I included a little bit of a paragraph over here. No, I didn't include a biography, but this is Rav Yosef Dov HaLevi Soloveitchik, not Rav Yosef, who's normally referred to as the Rav. This is the Rav's grandfather, the Beis HaLevi. So the Halevi asks a very simple question. Look in 2 Aleph. Ani Yosef Ha'od Avichai, skip to the middle of the first line after the period. Hinei b'pasuk zeh. So the Beis HaLevi says, there are many questions that come up when reading this verse. But first of all, the one that the Beis HaLevi's focus is on is a very simple question. Achar daharei kol divrei Yehuda elav, bizvakucho im Yosef ata, hayorak shechoshesh letzaro shel aviv. Remember again, I didn't put it on the sheet, but what are the pesukim immediately preceding number one? Remember, how does Vayigash begin? Vayigash begins, of course, on the heels of Miketz. Okay, that's not a very profound statement, but Miketz ends, Vayigash begins, and how does Miketz end? Remember, there was the setup. Yosef planted his goblet in the sack of wheat of Binyamin. It's discovered, Binyamin, they're all being brought back to jail, to Mitzrayim, and Binyamin is going to be jailed. Parashas Vayigash begins with Yehuda engaging in an incredible act of heroism, essentially saying to Yosef, take me instead, because I cannot go back to face my father without my brother. I can't go back to my father without Binyamin. And should I have to go back without Binyamin, I do not know what's going to happen to my father. So ask the Beis HaLevi a very simple question. Yaakov Avinu has been spoken about over and over and over in the dialogue between Yosef and his brothers. Remember, the pre-revelation dialogue. Everything is Vayak. Remember again, when the brothers came down to Egypt, to go out and to purchase food. So what's the first question that Yosef asked them? He asked them, how was your father? Every time there's a dialogue, the question is always the same. How was your father? Is your father still, what's happening with your father? And here, just a few psukim earlier, Yehuda says to Yosef, you have to take me instead of Binyamin, because I can't go back to my father empty-handed. So asks the Beis Yosef, they've been talking about Yaakov Avinu this whole time. Why does Yosef ask the question, Ha'od Avichai? Why does he ask the question, is my father still alive, when it's clear, based on the previous conversations, that Yaakov Avinu is absolutely alive? Take a look at paragraph Beis. So the Beis Halevi answers this question by quoting a Medrash. Actually, quoted this Medrash in this morning's Telim Shir also. So the Beis Halevi quotes the line. He says, Medrash Rabba, Isa Apasik Zeh, Amr Abba Koin Bardala, Oy Lonu Biyom Hadin, Oy Lanu Miyom HaTochacha. So Abba Koin Bardala says, woe to us from the day of judgment, woe to us for the day of rebuke. Now this is referring to the scariness of the judgment that we have to endure after 120. How so? Yosef, katnan shal shivatim lo yachlu echav la'anos oso, ki nivhalu mipanov, v'chishiyava HaKadosh Baruch Hu, v'yochiyach l'chol echa lefi mashu ne'emar. So the brothers were so startled by Yosef. The brothers were unable to say anything. When Yosef just says the simple words, Ani Yosef, Ha'od Avichai, it's me, it's my father. The brothers don't know what to answer. Sa'aba Kohen Bardola says, what are we going to do after 120? When the Ribono Sha'olam says, nice to meet you. Ribono Sha'olam says, welcome. But the Moshe says, "Nu, how did you live? What do you think about your life?" If when they're confronted by a certain reality by Yosef, they can't speak. Saba Bardola says, how are we going to face God after 120? A very startling medrash. But the Beis Halevi gives an incredible interpretation. Look what he writes. Paragraph Gimel. Ve'es asher nira bazeh, da medrash mefarish de pasik zeh lo omru Yosef begeder pius lechav klal. Now, the first thing Beis Halevi says is the following. That phrase, Ha'od Avichai, was not meant as a conciliatory phrase between Yosef and his brothers. It was not what we call Divrei Pius, means words of conciliation. It was not, see, this in general is the subject to incredible dispute about the feelings between Yosef and his brothers post-revelation, right? There are many missing parts of the story of Yosef and his brothers. Does Yaakov Avinu ever know how Yosef gets down to Egypt? Meaning one would have thought that when Yaakov and Yosef meet for the first time after 22 years in this week's parasha, the first question that Yaakov Avinu is going to ask Yosef is what? By the way, how does a nice Jewish boy end up being the viceroy in Egypt? How exactly did that happen? Yet again, at least according to the text, he never asked that question. Many of the Persian point out, he never asked that question. Why? Why? Because he didn't want to know. There are certain things that I know, but I don't want to know. I deep down, I know what the truth is. I would rather be able to push that truth to the recesses of my subconscious, and I would rather not have to deal with it. The brothers themselves never make a full reconciliation with Yosef. If you remember again, when Yosef at first jails Shimon. So remember again, there's a conversation amongst the brothers where they say, oh, you see, this is happening because of what we did to Yosef. But amazingly enough, after Yosef reveals his identity, there's something that never occurs. What never occurs? An apology. Yosef, we're really sorry we threw you into a pit and sold you like a piece of property. That never occurs. Now again, it could be that it occurred, the text just doesn't record it. That is possible, but not probable. There's so many parts that are missing from this dialogue. So says the Beis Halevi something absolutely amazing. Yosef's first words to his brothers are not conciliatory words. They are not nice words. They're not, oh, I missed you so much. They're not, oh, it's so nice to have a family together. But rather, they're words of Musar. How so? Look what he writes. Da'achakach, ba'aposak ha'shini achar shenifalu mipanov, amr lahem shenis ani Yosef achichem. So the Beis Halevi makes an amazing observation. Go back up to number one for just a moment. So take a look at Pasuk Gimel. So source number 1, verse 3. Pasuk Gimel. Vayomer Yosef alecha, v'ani Yosef ha'od avichai. Fine, I'm Yosef, is my father still alive? They can't answer to him. Then in Pasuk Dalet, vayomer Yosef alecha, v'gishunai, come close to me. And then he says, ani Yosef achichem. You see, in Pasuk Dalet, that is a conciliatory dialogue. That's Yosef saying to his brothers, come close to me. I am your brother. I still feel feelings of brother towards you, no matter how you have treated me in the past. That is a conciliatory dialogue. But says the Beis Halevi, Ani Yosef Oda Vichai is not a conciliatory dialogue. So what is Yosef saying? Skip the paragraph Dalet. V'gam ha'sham lehem ha'od avichai, gam ki mefarish ha'medrash, delo hayu begeder she'il ha'klal. The truth is, says the Beis Halevi, the phrase ha'od avichai was not a question. Why wasn't it a question? Because based on what we said before, Yosef knows his father is alive. How does he know his father is alive? How does he know? Because they've been speaking about Yaakov Avinu this entire time. Now, is it possible that the brothers were lying? It's possible. But Yosef felt that it was pretty true that Yaakov Avinu was still alive. It wasn't a question. So what was it? Rather, Ani Yosef Ha'od Avichai is almost like a statement of astonishment. Is it really possible that my father is still alive? It's not a statement about Yaakov Avinu's health or well-being. But rather, again, it's almost like a statement of astonishment. What does that mean? Turn the page. Ani Yosef va'od avichai, kimatmiya va'omer, eini mevin heich yochol avi lachios. What Yosef HaTzadik was saying to his brothers was, I don't even understand how my father is still alive. I don't understand how my father is still alive. What does that mean? Ad atam mirov tsaro she'inu yodea mimeni ad ata. How could it be that my father, after living through all of these years of pain, is still alive? Paragraph Hey. Ubidvaram elu nitman baremesh she'ilu gidol lahem v'gam stira kol ta'anosav. Yosef HaTzadik is calling his brother's bluff. Or I should say differently, he's challenging his brother's sensitivities. How so? He says, Yehuda, remember this entire time, Parashat Vayigash has been saying, how could we do this to our father? You can't hold Binyamin. You have to let me return Binyamin, because how could we do this to our father to let Binyamin languish over here in Egypt? The Choltanos of Shal Yehuda, Hayomitzaro Shal Yaakov, Sheyigrom Lo Belikichaso, as Binyamin, so listen to this. Let me say this outside. It says something absolutely amazing. Yosef says to Binyamin, Yosef says to Yehuda, you're a liar. You're a liar. You're a disingenuous person. Don't cling to me that you care about our father. Don't cling to me that you're so worried about his mental state if you don't bring home Binyamin. Don't you dare cling to me that you are so concerned that I should have empathy for our father. Did you have empathy for our father 22 years ago? Did you care about our father 22 years ago when you took me, his bechor, from his beloved Rachel, the wife who he had lost just a short time before? Did you have any rachmanas on father then? If you want to tell me that you're going to be a big trouble if you come back without Binyamin, I'll believe that. But how dare you claim that you are the defender of our father's feelings? How dare you claim that you are the defender of our father's emotions? How dare you claim that you are the defender of our father's mental well-being? You don't care about our father. Because if you really cared about our father, then you wouldn't have done what you did to me 22 years ago. And the Beis Halevi says something amazing. The Beis Halevi says, this is the meaning of the Medrash. The Medrash says, if we see how startled the brothers were because of Yosef, imagine how startled we will be after 120. Now, what does that mean? What's the connection? And the Beis Halevi says something amazing. Skip down to paragraph Vav. He says, "Vizeu shesim hamedrash lechishiyavu Hakadosh Baruch Hu." So what happens? So he says, when we come before God after 120, diktek va'amr lefimashu dam biyom adin. Skip actually to paragraph Zayin. Lamashal, let me give you an example. What happens after 120? Mishenu no saint tzedakah. So what happens? Let's say a person wasn't charitable during their lifetime. I didn't give a lot of tzedakah. So what happens? But I'm not worried. Why? I have a good answer. right? What's my good answer? So there's a very good answer. It's called yeshiva tuition, right? It's good. Plenty of good answers, right? There are plenty of good reasons why I can't give tzedakah, and some or a lot of tzedakah. And the truth is, many of them are exceptionally legitimate. So fine, I'm confident. After 121, I faced HaKadosh Baruch Hu. I couldn't give a lot of tzedakah. I have all of my terutzim. But listen to this. Look at the Beis Halevi says, paragraph Ches, Amnam marim lo mi ma'asav asher b'makom acher pizer harbe mamon avar davar sheino hagun. What's the problem? The problem is Ribono Shel Olam says, okay, you said that you couldn't give tzedakah because you didn't have enough money. But what does the Ribono Shel Olam do? You know, he has back copies of our credit card statements. So what does he do? He takes out, but how did you have money for that? And how did you have money for that? And you went there, and you went that. Meaning, if a person doesn't have money, the Ribono Shel Olam says, fine. Meaning, if you didn't spend on extra unimportant things, then God says, I'm totally good with the fact that you couldn't give money to charity. But it's not MS. It's not true. You spent money on all these other things. You allocated resources in all of these other directions. So how can you tell me there wasn't enough for tzedakah? Or in other words, says the Medrash something amazing. You know what the scariest thing after 120? We speak about this all the time. You know, after 120, the fact that God is going to confront me that I sinned, I have an answer for that, right? What's the answer? We all have a good answer. What's the answer? After 120, Shmuel says, no, you did have Averus. So what's your answer? Let's rehearse this together, right? What's your answer? We're human. You created me. I mean, what do you want? The blame is not just on me. You share part of that blame as well. You created me with frailties, with wants, with desires. So that's a good ringtone. Right? So you created me with all of these different things. So I understand I have some responsibility, but you also have responsibility. But here's the amazing part. See, the Ribono Shel Olam, that we sin, he knows and he accepts. What the Ribono Shel Olam cannot tolerate is when people are disingenuous. God just says to us, just be honest with me. Be honest with me, with who you are, with what you are, and with what you're not. But don't pretend to be something that you're not. So if a person is going to say, so that the Beis Halevi's example is, if I'm going to say I didn't give a lot of stuff because I don't have a lot of money, that's fine, but my credit card statement better back up that statement. And if at the end of the day it turns out that I've spent money on a whole bunch of other things, but the one thing in life I didn't have enough money for was tzedakah, the Rebbe says, I'm sorry, you're being disingenuous with me. And that I have no tolerance for. Says the Beis Halevi, that is what is unfolding over here. Yosef is saying to his brothers, Ani Yosef, I'm Yosef. You remember what you did to me? Ha'od Avichai, you're so concerned with our father, with his well-being. Do you know the pain and suffering? Yosef hasn't even been around for the last 22 years. But he can only imagine the pain and suffering that his father went through, thinking that he was dead. Remember, we spoke about this in our previous year. Not just dead, but remember, Yaakov Avinu could find no nechama. Remember, we saw the Maharal 2 weeks ago. The Maharal said he can't find any nechama, he can't find any consolation. Why? Do you remember? No burial. Because he never had the ability to bury his son. There wasn't even closure. There wasn't even a levaya. There weren't even hespedim. There was no opportunity to really bring closure to his mourning. So Yosef says to his brothers, you're liars. You're liars. You're fake and you're disingenuous. Now see to yourself, now 1 second. But yet in the next pasuk, what does Yosef say? Ani Yosef achichan. I'm your brother. So what's going on over here? Is he calling them liars or is he saying he's brother? And the answer is, both. What is Yosef at Sadiq saying? He's saying, my dear brothers, if we're going to have a relationship, there's one thing that we need to establish, and that is honesty. If we're not going to be honest with each other, then at the end of the day, there is no relationship. There is no relationship in life. It doesn't matter what relationship it is, without honesty and integrity. So Yosef says, I'm sorry, my brother Yehuda, I respect you a lot, and I admire your willingness to give up your life for Binyamin's life. That's incredible. But don't for a second pretend that you care about our father. Because if you did, you would have never done to me what you did. And it's okay. You know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu has a plan. Don't be upset. The Ribono Shel Olam sent me here for a reason. It's okay. I've come to terms with my life. I've come to terms with my realities. But here's what I'm going to demand. Is that if we're going to repair this family, if we're going to repair this relationship, there must be honesty. So you want to say you're scared to go home to face dad without Binyamin? fine. You want to say you're scared to lose your portion in this world and the next world if you go without Binyamin, fine. But don't for a second make this about the feelings of our father. Because if you didn't care about it then, I can't really believe that you care about it now. So Yosef admonishes them, says the Beis Halevi. Yosef gives them stark musar. Yosef lays them out. But again, I want to be clear. It's not laying them out for the sake of verbally abusing or punishing them. It's laying them because it's Yosef saying, I want the relationship with all of you. I love you. You're my brothers. Even though you mistreated me so horribly, I love you. But if we're going to have a relationship, every single relationship requires transparency and requires honesty. If we could set that foundation, then we'll be able to coexist. But if we can't, then at the end of the day, I'm afraid that we'll just have a repeat of the past. Take a look at number 3. So that's the first approach. There are seats. Come inside. Right, so that's the first approach. Take a look at number 3. That's the Beis Halevi. So, right, so if you take a look now at number three, I want to share with you another, what I think is another incredible novel approach. Yes, Rishon.
He didn't think after 22 years they can have
Torah. He did, but you know what? Yosef felt that they had to demonstrate themselves better. To say that suddenly the most important thing in your life is your, if they had such charata, they would have told Yaakov what they did, and they would have attempted to somehow figure out what happened to Yosef. At the end of the day, they perpetuated a lie for 22 years. Now, for good reason, you know, they got so far into it, there was no backpedaling from it, but if you really cared about father that much, you would have told him, by the way, Yosef might not be dead. Take a look at... Okay, that's midrashically, but I'm saying, but textually, there's nothing to indicate that. Correct, they made a neder, but even so, they saw their father's pain. Take a look at number 3. Vayachalom ot chalom. So let's go a little bit back. Again, we're still just trying to figure out. Here's the amazing part of our Torah. The amazing part of our Torah is how three little words, ha'oda vichai, could generate so much profound discussions. Take a look at number 3. And this, by the way, this in our quest to understand ha'oda vichai, we're going to answer one of the other dramatic questions of this section. So, vayachalom ot chalom acher, vayisaper oso le'echa, vayomer, hinei chalamti chalom, od v'nei ha'shemesh ha'arech, v'echad esar kochem mishtacha v'mlis. Remember now, we're going back to Parshas Vayeshev. Now, the question, by the way, that we're going to stumble upon is going to be the question of ultimately, which is perhaps the most dramatic question of this entire story, which is, maybe it's not so dramatic. All right, I thought it was dramatic. Why doesn't Yosef ever contact his father? Right? For years already, for at least 5 years, he's viceroy. Two years, he's already viceroy. But even when he was working in Potiphar's house, right? He was already the head of the household before the whole episode with Mrs. Potiphar. So again, he has access to communication. Why does he never communicate home? Keep that in the back of your mind. So we go back now to Parshas Vayeshev, number 3. So the Torah discusses Yosef's dreams. This is the second one of the dreams. The sun, the moon, and the stars are all bowing down to me. Pasuk Yud, number 3, verse 10. Vayisaper el aviv ve'elachav. So he tells the dream to his father, to his brothers. And his father scolds him. His father rebuked him. So Yaakov Avinu rebukes Yosef for his dream. He says, now Yaakov Avinu understands that the sun and the moon are referenced to Yaakov and to Rachel, or to Yaakov and Bilhah, some maternal figure. And of course, the 11 stars are the brothers. So Yaakov rebukes Yosef. Now Rashi HaKadosh brings down, the reason why Yaakov rebuked Yosef is because every parent has this moment where you see your kids are getting into it. Things are about to explode, and one of the kids just keeps talking in a way that's baiting his or her siblings. And so, as a parent, what do you need to do? You shut it down, right? You got to shut down the dialogue. We're stopping the conversation. So Rashi brings down that's what Yaakov was doing over here. Yaakov wasn't really rebuking Yosef because he felt that Yosef was wrong in expressing the dreams. But Yaakov's looking around and he sees the expressions on his other son's face and he realizes this is about to turn volcanic, right? This is going to be an emotional volcano. I need to shut this down now. So he shuts it down by rebuking Yosef. Okay, now watch this. Fast forward to number 4. Okay, the dream is shut down, conversation ends. Brothers go to shepherd their flocks out in Shechem. Vayomer Yisrael Yosef, halo achicha ro'ed mishchem, l'chava shalicha aleihem. So what happens? So brothers go out to shepherd the flock. Yaakov calls Yosef over. Yomer lo, lech no re'e shlom ha'achecha v'shlom atzon, v'ashirini devar v'ashechom e'chevron v'yavo shechema. So what happens? Yaakov sends Yosef, Yosef, go check on your brothers, see how they're doing in Shechem. Now we know what happens after that. Yosef gets to Shechem, and what occurs? They strip him of his clothing, of his dignity, throw him in the pit, and we know the entire rest of the story. Rabbi Sachs, Chief Rabbi Jonathan Sachs, has an amazing observation. Look at number 5. So look what he writes. He says, immediately afterwards, so watch the progression here. So immediately before, in number 3, Yosef told his dream about the sun, the moon, and the stars bowing down to him. Yaakov Avinu's response, Yaakov's response, he rebukes him, shuts it down. Immediately afterwards, Yaakov sends Yosef to see how his brothers are doing in Shechem. So look what Rabbi Sachs writes. Immediately afterwards, we read of Jacob sending Joseph alone to his brothers. It was there, at that meeting far from home, that they plotted to kill him, lowered him into a pit, and eventually sold him as a slave. Yosef, had many years to reflect on that episode. That his brothers were hostile to him, he knew. But surely Yaakov knew this as well. In which case, why did he send Yosef to them? Did Yaakov not contemplate the possibility that they might do him harm? Did he not know the dangers of sibling rivalry? Did he not at least contemplate the possibility that by sending Yosef to them, he was risking Yosef's life? No one knew this better from personal experience. Recall that Yaakov himself had been forced to leave home. Because of his brother Esav threatened to kill him once he discovered that Yaakov had taken his blessings. Recall too, that when Yaakov was about to meet Esav again, after an interval of 22 years, he was in great fear and distress, believing that his brother would try to kill him. That fear provoked one of the great crises in Yaakov's life. So Yaakov knew better than anyone else in Genesis that hate can lead to killing, that sibling rivalry carries with it the risk of fratricide. Yet, Yaakov sent Yosef to his other sons knowing that they were jealous of him and hated him. Yaakov presumably knew these facts. What else could he conclude as he reflected on the events that led up to his sale as a slave? That Yaakov had deliberately placed him in danger. Why? Because the immediately prior event when Yosef had told his father that the sun and the moon, his father and mother, would bow down to him. Turn the page to the side. This angered Yaakov and Yosef knew it. His father had rebuked him. It was outrageous to suggest that his parents would prostrate themselves before him. It was wrong to imagine it, after all the more so to say it. Besides which, who was the moon? Yosef's mother, Rachel, the great love of Yaakov's life, was dead. Presumably then he was referring to Leah. But his very mention of the sun and the moon and the 11 stars must have brought back to his father the pain of Rachel's death. Yosef knew that he had provoked his father's wrath. What else could he conclude but that Yaakov had deliberately put his life at risk? So this is a dramatic, novel idea by Rabbi Sachs. Rabbi Sachs actually posits that Yosef HaTzadik understood, and it's, once he says it, it's logical. If you think about it, here my father gets angry at me at the dreams, and why would he send me to the middle of nowhere with brothers who are actively hostile to me? Why else would he do that if not that it was some type of setup to get me out of the family? So says Rabbi Sachs dramatically that Yosef HaTzadik puts these pieces together, albeit in a wrong fashion, but puts all the puzzle pieces together, and the conclusion he arrives at is that my father was colluded with my brothers to have me sold and pushed out of the family. Wow. Now once you go ahead, thank you for that. Right now, once we go ahead and you say that, now, by the way, a lot of other pieces of the story begin to come together. Take a look at number 6. So Yosef, remember, settles in Egypt. Yosef settles in Egypt. He has 2 sons. Torah says, number 6, Vayikra Yosef Eshem HaBuchor Menashe, Ki Nashani Elokim Eskol Amali, VeEskol Beis Avi. What a dramatic name. He names his first son Menashe. Why? Because God has allowed me to forget all of my suffering. That part I get, right? All of my challenges, ve'eskol beis avi. God has allowed me to forget the house of my father. Yosef, why do you want to forget the house of your father? Your father loves you. You want to forget about your brothers, I hear about that. But to forget about your fathers, why forget about your fathers? So look what Rabbi Sachs writes in number 7. Uppermost in Yosef's mind was the desire to forget the past. not just his brother's conduct towards him, but all my father's house. Why so, if not that he associated all my trouble, not just with his siblings, but also with his father Jacob? Yosef believed that his father had deliberately put him at his brother's mercy, because angered by the second dream, he no longer wanted contact with the son he had once loved. That is why he never sent a message to Yaakov that he was still alive. Do you want to know for 22 years why Yosef never reaches out? Because, posits Rabbi Sachs, Yosef thought that Yaakov was in on it. Yosef thought that he had angered his father so much with the dream. And by the way, that dream angered, he thought the dream angered Yaakov on so many different levels. It angered him because how dare he present this vision that he's going to lord over the family, and to bring up the memory of Rachel in such a dramatically painful way, to bring up the memory of Rachel in this way, the pain that must have evoked in his father, and it evoked so much pain that Yaakov delivers Yosef right into the hands of the brothers, who are ready to mercilessly deal with him and essentially get rid of the Yosef problem from the family. Yosef thought, therefore, that not only did his brothers not want anything to do with him, but his father didn't want anything to do with him as well, and that's why he never contacts Yaakov. Now watch this. Fast forward to Parshas Vayigash. Part number 8. Vayomer Avinu, Shuvu Shivru Lanu Ma'at Ochel. So remember again, Yehuda over here kind of goes through the whole story, because you can even see in the text, Yehuda's losing his patience a little bit with Yosef, because he doesn't understand why this viceroy is playing all of these games with them. So look what he says. He says, listen, Yosef, right, this is before Yosef reveals himself. Viceroy, my father told us to come and purchase some food. Vayomer lo nuchal aredesk im yesh achinu akaton itanu, v'yaradnu, ki lo nuchal liros p'nei yesh achinu akaton itanu. So we told our father that we can't go. This is now Yehuda telling over to Yosef what had happened back in Canaan in the dialogue with Yaakov. So Yehuda's saying, we told our father we can't get any more food unless we bring Binyamin with us. That's what the ruler in Egypt said. So now Yehuda relates to Yosef, this is pre-revelation, relates to Yosef what Yaakov Avinu had said. Your servant, my father, said, Atem yedatem kishnayim yoldo liishti. So Yaakov Avinu says to Yehuda, you know that my wife Rachel gave birth to two sons. Vayetzi ha'echad mi'iti. These words are so heartbreaking. One went away from me. Va'omar, and you said to me, tarach tarof tarath. You told me that this son Yosef was torn apart by a wild animal. V'lori'isiv ad hino. And I have not seen him since. Those words, obviously, if he was killed by Amal, you haven't seen him since. What is he saying? He's talking the way a bereaved father talks. That a bereaved parent every single day wants to see their child, wants to hold their child, wants to kiss their child, wants to just be with their child. Every single day, Yaakov Avinu says to Yehuda, I just want you to understand my pain. Every single day since you came to me 22 years ago with that bloodied cloak, every single day, not a day goes by that I don't yearn and pine to see my Yosef. Now you want to take Binyamin, and some type of tragedy is going to happen. Happened to him, and you will bring down my gray head in misery to the grave. So what happened over here? For the first time in 22 years, Yosef hears that that his father loves him. For the first time, Yosef realizes, my gosh, I was so dramatically mistaken. My father wasn't in on it. They told my father that I was torn apart by a wild animal. They concocted some type of story to go ahead and lead my father to think that I was killed. He never delivered me to their hands. He never colluded with them in my demise. He never wanted anything bad to happen to me. He loved me every single day for the last 22 years. He missed me every single day for the last 22 years. Look at number 9. At that moment, Yosef realized that his fear that his father had rejected him was unwarranted. On the contrary, he had been bereft when Yosef did not return. He believed that he had been torn to pieces, killed by a wild animal. His father still loved him, still grieved for him, And against this background, we can better understand Yosef's reaction to this disclosure. So what happens? When Yosef hears, what sends Yosef? You know, the wording of the pasuk is very strong. If you look back at number one for just a moment, Torah says, "Velo yochol Yosef le'isapek." Yosef cannot contain himself anymore, meaning this whole time, he's kept his emotions inside. Then something happens that says, I can't, the dam is about to burst. 22 years of pent-up emotion is about to come out. What was it? What was it that sent him over the edge? What was it that no longer allowed him to contain himself? You know what it was? When he heard that he was wrong about his father. When he heard that his father grieves for him. When he heard that his father loves him. When he heard that his father misses him and thinks about him every single day. Yosef can no longer contain himself. Because for the last 22 years, I lived with the pain of thinking that my father colluded with my brothers to go and choreograph my demise. I thought my father didn't love me. By the way, not just didn't love me, but my father despised me. And now I realize how profoundly wrong I was. I spent the last 22 years trying to forget everything about my family because all those memories brought me were pain, and now I realize how wrong I was. To which leads Yosef. He can't hold himself back, and what does he say? I'm Yosef. Ha'od avi chai. Is it true that my father who loves me is still alive? Is that relationship still alive? Look at the last paragraph at number 9. Yosef's first thought is not about Yehuda or Binyamin, but about Yaakov. A doubt he had harbored for 22 years had turned out to be unfounded. Hence, his first question, is my father still alive? And in number 10, Rabbi Sachs goes on to explain, we said it already, this is why Yosef never contacted his father for 22 years. But listen to this, now you understand the pasuk. Because Yosef could have said, Ani Yosef, ha'od avinu chai. Ha'od avinu chai, is our father still alive? That's not what he says. What does he say? Ha'od avi chai, is he still my father? He's still my father. He still loves me. He still cares about me. 22 years, I felt like an orphan. My mother died when I was young, and I had a living father, but I felt like an orphan. Is it really possible that my father still loves me, that relationship is still there, that we have the ability to reconcile, that he's been missing me every single day as much as I have missed him? That's the power of Ha'od Avi Chai. But there's an incredible lesson. There's an incredible lesson, because remember again, all of these stories are exceptionally dramatic, but they teach us incredible life lessons. What's the incredible life lesson? The incredible life lesson is how often is there discord that exists within family because people walk around with certain preconceived notions about how someone else feels about them. I automatically assume I know this one likes me, this one doesn't like me. Or because this one said this or did this, I go ahead and ascribe certain feelings to that statement, and we walk around life. This is my sim. Unfortunately, this happens every single day. So many families live in a fractured state, not because there's actively anything wrong, but because people have certain perceptions of the other that prevent them from connecting, that prevent them ultimately from dialoguing, that prevent them from going ahead and actually talking out the issues. That's Torah Tanya. Yaakov and Yosef lost 22 years together. Why? So again, at least according to Rabbi Sachs's approach, they lost 22 years together because Yosef lived his life based on an assumption about how his father felt about him. As opposed to taking the time to clarify that. As opposed to saying, Dad, just want to write you a letter, just want to let you know, I'm here in Egypt. It feels to me like you delivered me into the hands of my angry brothers and that you colluded with them in my demise. If that's true, don't write back. Okay, I got it. Right? Bracha v'hatzlacha. Good luck with the rest of your life. If it's not true, maybe we should get a cup of coffee together, right? If it's not true, then maybe we should find a way to connect. But instead, what ends up happening is Yosef just perpetuates what he assumes to be his father's mindset. How often does this happen in marriages? How often does this happen between parents and children? How often does it happen with siblings, with friends? We assume we know what people are thinking. We assume we know why people do the things that we do instead of just asking. By the way, I think you did something that hurt my feelings. Maybe you meant it, maybe you didn't mean it. If you meant it, we need to talk. If you didn't mean it, we need to talk also. Either way, we just need to talk, but we can't let assumptions kind of get away from us. Because when assumptions go unchecked, when assumptions go unvetted, alternate realities are created. And you know the amazing part about alternate realities? If alternate realities are left unchecked and uninvestigated long enough, those alternate realities become the only reality. And so we feel the pain of Yosef. On one hand, such beautiful reunification, everyone coming together. On the other hand, a real pain. A real pain. I can't believe it. I was just a few days' journey from home. Because, you know, again, remember, from Be'er Sheva to Mitzrayim is only a few days. Not even a few days if you're on horseback. A few days by camel. For 2 decades, I've been a few days from home. And I never even reached out. Because I felt that my father hated me. I felt that he despised me. I felt that he colluded with my brothers. And all I needed to do was just write home. Was just ask. Was just, Dad, just want to clarify, because this is the way I'm seeing things. An incredible lesson to us, how careful we have to be in our life relationships, not to just live our relationship based on assumptions. But if something is bothersome, if something is hurtful, if something seems to create a fracture or fissure within a relationship, how careful we have to be to jump on that, to work that through, to talk that through, in order that Chas V'Shalom, again, those chasms, those distances, don't become unbreachable. So take a look, one last approach, and then we'll conclude for tonight. If you take a look at number 11, so this is from the Sefer Igra de Kala. You can see Ratzi Alimerech Shapiro of Dinov. It says something quite beautiful over here. It says, listen to how beautiful this is. Lefi pshuto eino muvan. V'chiyad hashtalo yoda sh'aviv chai. V'ariakol sipro me'aviyem. U'ma'amar Yehuda ad heino hayakol me'aviv. So again, the Igra de Kala asks the same question we were asking before. Why does Yosef ask, say, Ha'oda Vichai, if at the end of the day they were speaking about Yaakov this whole time? Listen to how beautiful this is. A dramatically different approach. He says, Ach, hu sha'amar lehem ani Yosef, kemeaz ad hayom becheskasi, shelo nitmesi betumas ervas ha'aretz. So says the Igra de Kala something amazing. Yosef HaTzadik was saying different message. Ani Yosef, my brothers, I know you don't recognize me because externally I look different. Externally I look like an Egyptian. Externally I look like Egyptian royalty. But I just want you to know, Ani Yosef, I am still the same Yosef. What does it mean? Ha'od avi chai. Look what he writes. Od nikra midas yisod, kinoda misod, ahalo Hashem b'chayai, azamra lelokai ba'odi. So says the Igra de Kala, without getting into all of the technical details, Od, there's still that piece of me. The Ha'od, the additional piece of me, Avichai, my father is still alive. The father, who is he referring to? To HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Yosef is saying to his brothers, Ani Yosef, I look different, I talk differently, I live in a different land, but I want you to know, Ha'od, the Od in me, right? My essence, in my essence, Avi, my father, the Ribono Shel Olam, Chai. In other words, according to the Igra de Kala, it's not an interrogative. It's not a question. It's a statement. It's Yosef telling his brothers, I still have the spirit of the Ribono Shel Olam in me. I may be far from home geographically, but I'm still right at home in the Abrahamic family spiritually. What is Yosef saying? My dear brothers, I have been able to keep my ruchnius despite all of the challenges and all of the trauma. When we go through challenges in life, sometimes the thing that takes the greatest hit is spirituality. So people think adversity brings people closer to God. Generally not the case. Generally adversity creates stress between the individual and HaKadosh Baruch Hu for one simple reason. When a person is suffering through adversity, often they have to use all of their energy, all of their emotional and spiritual reservoirs just to stay afloat, just to keep my head above water. Often there's not room for God. Yosef says to us, I need you to know that despite all of my adversity, despite all of my difficulties, Ha'od Avichai, my father, the Ribon Shalom, is still alive in me. But watch this. Take a look at number 12. The Shem Yishmuel writes so beautifully. Ha'od Avichai. Skip down a little bit. He says, Veniras, middle of the second line, right after the period. Venira. She'elaso ha'isem racha kodesh shara alav. See, interesting enough, the Shem Yishmael says the exact opposite. The Shem Yishmael says that Yosef says, Ani Yosef, I am still spiritually grounded. Ha'od Avichai, is my father still connected with the Ribono Shel Olam? Is my father still alive with the spirit of Ruach HaKodesh? Is my father still alive ultimately again with the spirit of God within him? So if you bring these both together, not mutually exclusive, Ani Yosef, I am Yosef, I am still the same person despite my adversity. Ha'od Avichai, my father is, my father Ribono Shel Olam is alive in me, but I also want to know, is my father Ribono Shel Olam still alive within my father? What, according to this approach, what the Torah is teaching us is the need to keep our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu even in the most difficult of circumstances. We all encounter challenges in life. Some of us encounter acute challenges. Some of us encounter more minimal challenges. But you know, there's no such thing as a minimal challenge, because whatever my challenge is, it's a big one. It might not be big objectively, right? You know, there are always children starving in Africa. That is true. You know, there's always someone who has a bigger problem than I do. But as we all know, just because someone has a bigger problem than me doesn't mean that my problems are not significant. What Yosef is teaching us is the need to make sure that we keep our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu even in the midst of adversity. Ani Yosef, that becomes the mantra of the Jew. I might be in Egypt, and sometimes it's geographic Egypt, sometimes it's emotional Egypt, spiritual Egypt, but the Jew always has to be able to make the declarative statement, Ha'od Avi Chai, in the Ode, in my essence, in my gestalt, in who I am, my father, the Ribono Shel Olam, is still alive. So if you bring these all together, what this will conclude, turns out that the Torah is teaching us three profound and impactful lessons, and again, all from three words. From three words, Ha'od Avichai, the Torah teaches us three incredible things. Based on the Beis Halevi, who understands Ha'od Avichai as a statement of rebuke, Yosef giving Musr to his brothers, Yosef telling his brothers, you're liars, you're disingenuous. We learn the lesson that in all of our, if our relationships are to endure, if our relationships are going to be meaningful, they must have a foundation of honesty, transparency, and integrity. If that is not part of the relationship, if I'm going to be disingenuous with the people I love, whether it's a spouse, whether it's a parent, whether it's a child, the relationship will not endure. You may be able to perpetuate it for a while, and the truth is, it may endure on some level, but it'll hobble along. It'll never be meaningful, it'll never be impactful, and it'll never be fulfilling. Life relationships, in order to endure, in order to be sustained, in order to be sustained, have to have a foundation of integrity, and have to have a foundation, this is not a word, but I'm going to use it, of genuinity, or genuineness, right? Have to be genuine. Where there's disingenuous, when parties are disingenuous, there could be no relationship. Lesson number two is how important it is to talk things out with our loved ones. Because so often there are shalom bias problems. And shalom bias, you know, is not just about marriage. Shalom bias refers to any level of discord we have within our families. Every family has their own dynamics, but so often those dynamics are amplified because people don't talk, because people don't discuss, because people don't, you know, sometimes even yelling at each other is not such a bad thing. You know, yelling is better than silence. Unequivocal truth, because at least you talk about it. Because how often does it happen that families disintegrate, relationships disintegrate, because people walk around with preconceived notions about others and they never take the time to put all of the baggage on the table and just discuss it? Nebuch Yosef lives 22 years unnecessarily as an orphan when his father was just a few days' journey away, because he thought he had it all figured out. He thought he knew the MS. He thought that he was inside his father's mind and knew exactly what his father was thinking and what his father was seeing. But, oh, Yosef, had you only taken the time to be Mavara, had you only taken the time to clarify what was actually going on, how much pain you could have spared yourself and you could have spared your brother. You could have spared your father, excuse me. Lesson number two is that we have to be willing to engage in dialogue with our loved ones if we want those relationships to endure. And lesson number three is the need to be able to keep our connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu even in the most trying and difficult of circumstances. We are all bombarded by challenges, big challenges, small challenges, all different types of challenges. Those challenges sometimes threaten our very relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But the job of the Jew is to be able to say, Ani Yosef, I am grounded. Wherever I am, wherever life takes me, I am grounded. And I will always live a life of Ha'od Avi Chai, that my father is alive in me. The Ribon Shalom is alive in me. No matter what happens, no matter how much I get bombarded, no matter how much I get challenged, my relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu will always remain steadfast. My relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu will always remain my anchor. My relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu will always be the foundational pillar upon which I will build a beautiful life. All right, we'll stop over here for tonight. Let me continue with Vayechi next week. Thank you.